The following Smart Out Moment Smack Talk podcast is a pay-per-view point episode, and it is scheduled to break down the 2019 Stomping Grounds pay-per-view event. Introducing first, I am your host as always, Tony Mango, and I'm joined by Callum Wiggins.
A card so disappointing that we couldn't even draw Rob to it.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. It's true. This is not the most exciting pay-per-view that we've had in a long, long time, in the slightest bit. I mean, that's something that's like it could be a good thing. Like, you know, we were talking about this ahead of time before we started recording. If you go into an event with low expectations, sometimes that ends up working out better. And, you know, you can go into an event with like all the potential in the world and it can end up turning out to be garbage, but this is not looking good. And I haven't been double checking about like some different things with the ticket sales and stuff, but the last thing that I had seen was that they were just giving away tickets. It's like 2-for-1 deals and stuff. So
yeah, I saw some of the seating plan images, and there's just like a sea of different colored seats, because the ones that are sold and ones that aren't sold, it's just I think that people have a tendency to over exaggerate it, to make it to the point of like, oh my god, they only drew 1,000 people to Stomping Grounds, but it's gonna be a lot more than that. But I think it'd be very surprising if they got capacity out of this one, or yeah. if they managed to, then it's because they gave away a lot of tickets and to locals at the start of the day or whatever.
This is not going to be one of those like at a sold out attendance breaking a record type of things. This is going to be more like, let's tarp off the crowd and see if maybe the energy is going to be a little bit better that way or something, you know.
I'm sure they'll claim that they set a very high attendance.
Michael Cole get the whole Fed line to him where it'll be like, oh my, this is the best thing that we've ever done. Stomping Grounds was a rousing success, like that kind
of. Oh my god, 30,000 people in attendance. This stadium only holds 16. 30,000 people in attendance.
85,000. This is just, I mean, with a lot of problems that are going on in WWE right now, you got to look at a card like this and just go, oof. Because this is indicative of a lot of different problems, and not everything's bad about it. So you're not just going to hear a bunch of us crapping on it. Some stuff is, you know, something to look forward to. But I want to start off with what I consider to be one of the biggest examples of just no shit for why this card is not drawing anybody, which is we've got so many people that are missing on this card. The Miz, Braun Strowman, Bobby Lashley, the Intercontinental Champion Finn Balor, Andrade, which I'll give Andrade a pass. You know, his mom and his aunt just recently died, so it's like, hey, how about we don't have this dude like work, you know, for a little bit. Charlotte Flair's not on there. There's no women's tag match. There's no Raw tag team titles. The 24/7 championship is probably not going to be factored in here, although if it is, Drake Maverick is totally losing it at his wedding. But any kind of like look at the people that are missing from the card makes you wonder, why did they bother to put Big E and Xavier Woods against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn on this card? That to me is just like, this was announced ahead of time on through like the dirt sheets and stuff like that, which of course you got to take with a certain grain of salt, that they were like, wow, they're really trying to figure out how to shape up this card to get it really interesting for the people that aren't buying the tickets. And the very first match that was announced after that was Big E and Xavier Woods against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. It's like, I'm a big fan of all four of those guys, but that is not something that's going to change the tide.
No, of course not. I mean, it doesn't help with the fact that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have been teaming together quite a lot the last month or so, and have they actually won a match as a tag team yet?
If they have, it's completely inconsequential and I've forgotten about it.
And that's partly due to the fact that the New Day and Kofi Kingston in general, which we'll obviously talk about later, have been very well protected recently, based around just Kingston being the champion, and so the New Day have been along for the ride as well. So, and Big E's only just recently come back, so there's a little bit of interest regarding that, but it's just a case of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in some form or fashion have been in matches pretty much exclusively with the New Day and people surrounding the New Day, like Seth Rollins as well and all that other stuff, but they're so overexposed. I mean, we won't even get into the fact that one of them's on Raw and one of them's on SmackDown because, you know, wildcard rule and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just a match that you would expect to see on SmackDown or Raw. It doesn't need to be on a pay-per-view.
Now, this is the type of match that they would have booked if this was a SmackDown only pay-per-view.
Yeah, I can only imagine that the reason why they're putting this on is to give Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn a win after their recent losses. But you can't even expect them to do that, because why would they? Why would they, essentially? Like, it doesn't matter. So, and usually in my mindset, when a match on a pay-per-view doesn't matter, you typically go with the babyface just because it's a feel-good moment, if nothing else.
This is just one of those matches where I look at that and I go, like, somebody pitched this as being like, well, this will be something really interesting. Or somebody pitched it as, I don't know, we got to do something. Let's just put that on there. These people are big enough names. That'll be something. And with Super Showdown, they put their focus on that, which is like, of course they did. But Stomping Grounds, very quickly, even before that, felt like it was just being pushed aside. I mean, this was supposed to be Backlash, and they changed the date of it and everything. And it's like, well, if WWE doesn't invest any time in these kind of things, then no wonder people don't care about it. Like, it's very transparent when WWE doesn't care about something. And this card is filled with rematches. More than, like, any other card that I've been seeing in a long time. Like, New Day and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have been facing each other on Raw and SmackDown for the past couple of weeks and stuff. And this is going back to Money in the Bank. So it's like, well, what's the draw here? Like, what is the legitimate reason that I should be excited for this? Other than the fact that I like these four people, which you can only do that so many times without ruining that goodwill, you know? Like, I'm a big fan of watching, for instance, like, some of the people in the 205 Live division. Like, I think that Drew Gulak is, like, very entertaining, but you can't just, like, put him in a match and go, well, you like Gulak, you're going to like this. You know? Like, there needs to be more than that.
Yeah, well, again, it's another just huge issue with the wild card rule in the sense that they've been hugely overexposed.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that it's not just a case like these matches have been happening all the time, it's also the fact that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have been on virtually every show since the wild card rule was instituted. And so the New Day in some form of fashion, obviously Big E's only come back from injury, but everyone else is just always there. It's like, you know, you gave Robert Roode a new gimmick a couple of months ago, as he appeared in the last like 2 months or whatever. You know, you got the Kabuki Warriors that you could do something with. You could maybe do something with Matt Hardy. You've got loads of people who are just sitting in catering.
And that's the thing, too, is, like, this wild card rule was supposed to be an answer for lower ratings because I don't know if it's Vince McMahon or if it's, like, Kevin Dunn or a combination of people or whatever, but at least somebody up in the higher-up position thought the ratings are low because we don't have our bigger stars on both shows, which, fundamentally, that doesn't make any sense, because if that were the case, then each one of the shows would already have higher ratings because, like, if Roman Reigns is on SmackDown and your answer for helping out Raw is to put him on Raw, well, then why isn't the SmackDown rating higher? You know what I mean? Like, that's just, like, the logic behind it doesn't exist. And this is the type of card that they did the whole best of both worlds thing where it's like, well, people don't really pay attention to the Raw-only cards and the SmackDown-only cards, so let's do, like, the best names that we can possibly bring for every single event. And now this is with the wild card rule. This is even more indicative of what we're going to get if the brand split ends, which now that they've switched Clash of Champions around, maybe that's going to change in a different capacity or something. But this is not the selling point that it should be for being either let's get rid of the brand split or let's have the best of both worlds or let's have, you know, options of everybody that we really want to put the focus on, because I would think, and I don't know if you agree or disagree with me on this, I would be more excited for a card that didn't have a lot of these big names and had more of the lower names. No, just because it would be something different.
No, I was just thinking that. I thought that it would be a bigger draw to me personally, and maybe that wouldn't be the case for everyone, but if it was just some randomly put on the card, Shelton Benjamin against Robert Roode, or something like Sin Cara against Jack Gallagher, or something along those lines. Just look at it and go, what? Why are they putting this match on the card? And then it's just a bizarre injury. It's completely counterproductive. Like a case of, oh well, we've been building all this stuff for all these weeks, and we're just gonna put you two together in a match on the card. Like, yeah, let's throw Chad Gable and Otis together in a match.
But it's because it's like, at least then I would be curious.
Yeah, it's got a freak show capacity to it. Really, just a case of like, oh wow, I haven't seen this guy compete in like months. It's like, yeah, let's have this Shinsuke Nakamura against Lince Dorado match. It's gonna be right. Great.
Because I look at this card and I'm like, all right, well, I would completely get rid of the Big E and Xavier Woods versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn match. There serves no purpose for this. It's not a number one contenders for the tag titles match. There's nothing on the line. It has no stipulation for the steel cage match. Nothing. I am assuming that it gets factored in only in the sense of saying, all right, we're going to put it on the pre-show, which they haven't announced it yet. I don't think that it's supposed to be on the pre-show. They haven't, like,
it's one of the main contenders, it would be.
Yeah. This one and the Cruiserweight title match, I'm assuming, are the two that either one of them is going to be on the pre-show.
Yeah.
But I'm figuring the only way that they're doing this is because they want that to be something that people weigh in on during the steel cage match. And it's like both sets of two people get involved on the outside and do that kind of a thing, which is like, that's very in your house, like just kind of bland and okay, this is a glorified episode of Monday Night Raw type of thing. But I would replace that, and I would replace pretty much all the different like number one contenders and stuff in this, like Kofi Kingston versus Dolph Ziggler. That match is one of the ones that I'm actually interested in watching. It's the steel cage match. That's another thing that we can talk about a little bit, but whatever. But like, rather than have a continuation of what happened at Super Showdown, I know that it's easy, and I know that it's like, well, we already did the work, so let's just kind of keep this going for another 4 weeks kind of a thing, just because people are being lazy and stuff. I would have rather had them do something completely different and just have, we're going to have a number one contenders match, and like you said, like, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura wins, and it's Shinsuke against Kofi Kingston. Because then I'd be like, huh, okay, wow, didn't see that coming. Very interested. Why are they doing this? Is Shinsuke going to win the title? Like, you know, that would be more interesting. I would rather see Becky Lynch against Naomi than against Lacey Evans again. Or instead of a continuation of Seth Rollins versus Baron Corbin, why not have Seth Rollins versus Sami Zayn? Like, that to me is where I look at this card and I go, it wouldn't be that hard to book matches that had no setup. And that's actually easier to do than to just be like, how do we drag out this feud longer for every fucking feud?
Yeah, it'd probably work a lot more. I mean, it's just the idea of like, they just don't seem to do number one contenders matches anymore. Or if they do a number one contenders match, that guy or girl becomes the contender for the next 3 months.
Yeah, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn win this.
Yeah, I'll go Kevin and Sami as well.
Yeah, and it's just like, guaranteed, even if it's a great match, because these four are great. Like, the New Day is one of the best tag teams. Kevin Owens is great. Sami Zayn is great. Like, there's nothing that's their fault on this. It's totally the creative and production side of things. Mm-hmm. They'll do their job, but it's going to be completely inconsequential. And then if you missed it, I'm sure it's going to be something that it wasn't like, oh, you can't miss this, you know, whatever, which is really like a shame to say. But the other match that could be on the pre-show, or they could just put this on the main card, and they really should at this point, just to kind of like spice things up, is the Cruiserweight Championship triple threat match. That's Tony Nese against Akira Tozawa against Drew Gulak, wherein they had a whole number one contenders match, and Tozawa and Gulak both ended up being pinned at the same time. And they just very quickly were like, at the beginning of the last episode of 205 Live, they were like, hey, by the way, it's going to be a triple threat match. All right, Jake Maverick's not here. Which is like, kind of funny, but I'm of two minds about this. For the longest time, I thought that Gulak was the guaranteed next champion, and then Mike and Maria Kanellis re-signed their contracts. And now I'm thinking, no matter what, Tozawa is taking the fall. But is he taking the fall for Nice, or is he taking it for Gulak? Is Nice beating Tozawa so that Gulak can say, you didn't beat me, you beat Tozawa, we need to drag this out for another month until Extreme Rules? Or, that's more so a scenario where if Mike Kanellis is going to be the champion, because then Tony Nese beats Drew Gulak, and then Tony Nese can drop it to Mike Kanellis at SummerSlam or something like that. Or, if Kanellis is not winning the championship, does Gulak beat Tozawa so that Tony Nese can say, you beat Tozawa, you didn't beat me, and then they have their match at Extreme Rules? It's essentially, whoever beats Tozawa gets challenged by the other guy and says, well, you didn't beat me. That's how I'm seeing things.
I like Tozawa a lot. Like, he's obviously great in the ring. I don't know why he gets so many Cruiserweight Championship matches. Like, he seems to have been in more Cruiserweight Championship matches the past year than practically anybody.
I think he's just like a reliable dude. Like,
yeah, I know, but it would be a bit more flavorful in a sense, because we've seen him in a couple of Cruiserweight Championship matches already this year that someone like Brian Kendrick put in there instead. Yeah, just for something a little bit different every now and again. Not that the Zao is bad, and it'll definitely be like a good opponent in making this match good, but just something different. And obviously I've been campaigning for Drew Gulak to get the Cruiserweight Championship for a long time, because he's great, he's got so much strong character work, and he's great in the ring.
That dude is going to be one of the best trainers that they have.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I hope that he's a lifer. He went from somebody that I was really just kind of like, oh, my God, what is this dude doing on the roster? To being like, he can cut promos and multiple different types of characters. He can wrestle multiple styles. He seems to just, like, do everything. Like, if they're like, hey, you want to be on NXT UK? He's like, yep. Like, just, that guy seems like a fucking amazing employee.
Yeah. The Tony Nese experiment has completely failed, I think, yeah, on every level. He's just completely bland in pretty much every aspect of his character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still a case of, like, the sooner he isn't the champion anymore, the better for 205 Live. But I pretty much agree with you that I think it's nailed on that Mike Kanellis is the next Cruiserweight champion, which isn't... It's an upgrade in the sense that at least Mike has a character and he cuts good promos. In terms of ring work, it's not an improvement, because as good as sound a actual wrestler as Mike Kanellis is, he doesn't exactly scream Cruiserweight with his work. He's like, oh, well, this is just a small, normal wrestler.
See, I'm thinking Nese and Kanellis are kind of like a lateral move. I'm not big on Kanellis.
Oh, no. But I would appreciate Kanellis more just because Nese has no character.
Yeah.
Whereas even if Kanellis' character isn't a great character, it's still a character.
That's true.
And Maria can carry a lot of the brunt of that side of things as well. And I think they'd actually gain a lot more confidence and bravado about them if they had the championship. And then that means you can transition away from them to, say, giving Chad Gable the title at some point.
Yeah, Gable, Lorcan, Dallar. Maybe babyface Drew Gulak.
Yeah, there's a lot of good babyfaces, like interesting babyfaces on 205 Live that would benefit from beating somebody who's as arrogant and full of himself as Kanellis is. But that's the character that Nese should be. Nese only ever had a character where it was basically just counting my abs. It's like, just count along, how many abs do I have? And it was like the most base level character that you could possibly hope to have, but at least it was something. And now he's just a guy with a belt.
He's a mannequin.
Yeah. And obviously he's a mannequin that can work, and obviously this would be a good match result of it. Like, I'm sure the match would be good. It's just, I think, like, if I was them, I would personally prefer it to be on the kickoff show. Because you saw what happened in Money in the Bank. They were put into a death slot and the crowd couldn't give a fuck about it.
Yeah, that's true.
At least when you go out as the kickoff match, the crowd hasn't seen any action yet, so they're a bit more interested with it. You'll probably have a bit more time to perform, and there's more of a chance people might see you on YouTube and other stuff along those lines as well. If they don't have the networks, they might just be flicking around and just see it. But it was just a case of, but I'm not them, so maybe they do want to actually be on the main card, and I'm sure they could easily slot into there, but I just don't think people will care at all if they're on the main card, and they'll be stuck in between the like WWE Championship match and one of the women's matches or something like that.
Yeah, I could see that being the case.
But in terms of who's going to win, Nice, yeah. I think they're still holding that for Kanellis.
Yeah, I'm leaning a little bit more towards Nice, but I'm only 51% Nice, because I'm still thinking that there's maybe a chance that Gulak wins, and maybe...
I'm 100% for Gulak winning.
Yeah. I had my, creative control over this thing, Tony Nice would have never won the championship to begin with, because I never thought that turning him babyface was a good idea. But very quickly after that, if somebody would have said, all right, well, WrestleMania is the cutoff point, you can start booking on the night afterward, I'd be like, all right, when do we get that title on Gulak? just kind of poor Nice. He seems like he'd probably be a really nice guy and stuff like that. But he has a babyface champion. It's just not working. And Gulak is too good to just, wait another year, you know?
Mm.
But I'm hoping that it's Gulak. If it's Nice, I'm just going to immediately change my prediction to being all right, well, Kanellis is the new champion. And that's happening at SummerSlam.
And if it's Tozawa, then wow, that's weird.
If it's Tozawa, I'm going to be... there would be nothing more shocking on this card other than maybe Dolph Ziggler winning the championship than Tozawa winning the championship. Because I think that's a guarantee that he's not winning. But hey, you never know. The SmackDown Tag Team Championship is on the line. Daniel Bryan and Rowan are going to face Heavy Machinery. And the story basically behind this has been that Bryan considers them an actual threat, but he just thinks that they goof around too much and stuff. So that's actually a decent way to kind of put them over a little bit, because it's not quite saying, well, these people are idiots and I can beat the crap out of them. It's saying, well, if they're serious, then they're a threat, but they don't do that. They do the worm and stuff, or the caterpillar. And I kind of like that. I think that in the end, Daniel Bryan and Rowan retain because it's not the time for Heavy Machinery to win those titles. And SummerSlam is coming up, and Daniel Bryan and Rowan are a bigger part for the card than Heavy Machinery would be. But I think that Otis and Tucker are going to get actually a pretty decent spotlight in this.
Yeah, it's almost as if Daniel Bryan has a clue about how to get people over. I always get the feeling, especially when the revelations came out about Daniel Bryan refusing to go to Saudi Arabia and they couldn't really do anything about it. I get a sense that Daniel Bryan goes into to business for himself pretty much all the time now. He just does what he wants to do and they just go along with it because it's for some reason. Because they've signed into this big contract now and they know that if he goes to any other promotion, he'll be their biggest star in overnight. Yeah. So they just let him... He's now at the same territory that Cena could get away with whatever he wanted to do. I see that as Bryan now as well. And I think he'll do a lot to try and get Heavy Machinery over because, frankly, SmackDown needs tag teams that are a big deal right now.
Yeah, and Bryan is not a selfish worker.
No, Daniel Bryan, there's another thing about Daniel Bryan. I always get the feeling that he has to be talked into winning matches.
Probably, yeah. He probably, in at least for a moment's thought process, he's probably thought all right, well, Heavy Machinery's going to win. We're just going to drop the titles. And then it's well, no, you guys have to stick with them a little bit longer. Then he'd probably be well, why not? If they beat us, then they'll be made.
I think the long-term goal is that they'll end up feuding with the New Day over the championship.
That's what I'm thinking too. Daniel Bryan and Rowan versus the New Day at SummerSlam.
Yeah, that's obviously a big chance there. I think they could also feud with... I mean, the options are sparse. Don't know how long... Jeff Hardy won't be back in that amount of time anyway, so they can't really do the Hardys thing at some point. Maybe it depends how long they want to hold the titles for. And in terms of other SmackDown tag teams, I mean, the B team aren't going to be there. You're not going to do anything with Kevin Owens and Sammy in a heel versus heel thing.
You're not doing Nakamura, Rusev. They don't even bother with them anymore.
No. And that's practically it, unless they do decide to go somewhere with this Chad Gable and Apollo Crews tag team. Which, that... like, by all reports, they've said that they've had matches on house shows and it got rave reviews.
Yeah, and they're definitely building towards those two being a tag team or in a feud, which I hope that's not the case. I hope it's a tag team.
Yeah, but well, they you say that, but like they did that 2 weeks ago, and then this week they weren't even on TV at all.
Yeah, they were.
Were they? Oh, mm-hmm. I must have like missed that because I was on. I'm now at the stage of really just flicking through stuff.
Yeah, so it was like... a backstage segment where Apollo talked to Zelina Vega, and he was like, "Hey, I'm still looking for Andrade." And oh, she's
I saw that bit, but I skipped through it because you know,
yeah. Because it's just a backstage segment. Yeah, yeah, she's like, you know, oh, you're really just flirting with me. And Andrade attacks him. And then when Apollo's just laying down, being all like, ah, crap, like Andrade just beats the shit out of me. Chad Gable standing off on the side with a clipboard. And he's just kind of like, oof. Like, it starts, like, writing down some notes. Like,
yeah. I like it. I'm hoping that he's giving him scores. I'm almost, yeah. I'm almost hoping that he turns it around. It's just a drawing of Apollo Crews off. But in terms of, yeah, just going back to this match, I like the pairing of Brian and Rowan. I like Rowan. Rowan has really grown on me in an unironic way now.
Rowan?
Obviously, because we have the future legend stuff. And yeah, so that's like the gimmick side of things. But he's not bad. He's nothing special, but just as a big guy who is in there as a tag team wrestler, I think he has to be a permanent tag team wrestler. But other than that, he's pretty... like nailed on for what he needs to be, just like a heavy for the real talker and the star of the tag team. I think he'll take. I mean, I'm not sure because it's a case of like it's more impressive for Heavy Machinery to like power him around the ring and do a lot of their power moves on him. They wouldn't be on a small guy like Brian, but Brian's the biggest star, so maybe you want to do that on him instead. Either way, they're going to get a bit of offense in, and I think they're going to have, if they book it well enough, it'll be a case of like one instance where you think the Heavy Machinery has got the win and then just moves on because it at least then leads to the idea that they could beat them further down the road.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, I'd say it's more than likely that Daniel Bryan and Rowan will win this match.
Speaking of really quickly on the idea, if Rowan were to be exactly the way that he is right now in the era of Hulk Hogan, he would be a fucking huge star.
Oh yeah, he would be like, they'd call him Redwood instead, and they just like, he'd come dressed as part tree. like in a giant tree covered like wood suit, and then he'd just strip that down and afterwards, and then he'd just wrestle Hulk Hogan. He'd put the like that claw move that he does, he'd do that on a Coco Beware or something like that, and then yeah,
he'd have some kind of manager like
Brian could be his manager. This is the thing, like, yeah, you'd assume that Brian would be at that point because
these two be too small.
Yeah, like, back in those days, say, like, oh, this hippie with the really long hair, and Brian would be called, I don't know, Icy Maple Tree or something like that.
Oh, I love that name. Somebody needs to make some call of Icy Maple Tree.
But yeah, it would just be... but in terms, I think they work well as tag team champions. There's definitely a lot more room to grow with those guys. Again, wood pun, yeah.
Good old Eric growing.
Yeah.
What else we have here? Let's start talking about these fucking rematch things, because I got like nothing to say about this. And I hate... just kind of brushing it aside, but Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre, I don't care. I didn't care at WrestleMania. I don't care now even less, because these two deserve better.
Yeah, they've put themselves into a situation where these are two guys who could easily be fighting for their respective world championships at any point in time. And they're now in a situation where neither of them can lose this match, and one of them is going to lose this match.
Because I'm thinking it's Reigns that wins, and McIntyre just gets that whole, like, we'll have him beat somebody down on Raw, and that'll make him seem better afterward, even though it's not going to fix the problems.
Well, look, I know wins and losses don't matter, but it's just a case of, like, the previous show, the Super Showdown, they have Reigns lose to Shane McMahon. And Drew McIntyre lost to Reigns at WrestleMania, and he hasn't really done anything. The only thing he's done since is basically just be Shane McMahon's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, these two should be in more prominent positions. Like, Reigns should be... I'm not saying Reigns should be fighting for the title already. They could be positioning for a match between, like, Kofi and Reigns, and I thought that could be an interesting way to take it, is, like, Reigns is, like, say, yeah, I'm back now, and I want to have my championship. And I would like to see, not so much Kingston beat him, but that to lead to whoever Reigns' actual feud would be against. Like, they have that match, and the guy he faces, whether that's, I don't know, he has an extended feud with Nakamura. He has done good stuff with Rusev in the past. Andrade would be a good fit for him as well. It'd be a chance for him to just be in the upper mid-card just with someone that he hasn't had an extended feud with before.
And like we were talking about earlier, of just doing some somewhat random matches, how much more interesting would that be if it was just Kofi Kingston versus Roman Reigns for the WWE Championship?
Yeah, it would be a lot more interesting, but it's just a case of, you don't necessarily need to give Reigns a title at any point in time soon, but you just need to give him something to that the fans are interested in just because it's different.
Right.
Whereas this feels like, basically, any time that Reigns hasn't been fighting for the championship, he's been fighting the authority.
Yeah.
And it's the exact same storyline. It's just, instead of, I don't know, Sheamus or, what was their stupid name? The European Union? Whatever it was.
The European
League of Nations. League of Nations.
Yeah, that was Bartel and...
Oh, yeah.
Eichner.
But then you have all like fighting Triple H or Vince McMahon or anything like that. Now he's just, it's Shane and it's Drew and it's The Revival and it's...
And Elias.
Yeah, and Elias. Well, I barely even register Elias now because he's now the resident jobber of that team.
Mm.
So, but...
It's just a shame.
Well, you just have to assume that like Shane potentially get involved in this one. Miz could get involved. Elias could get involved. Maybe it's just trying to spice up a little bit, but if it's just a straight match, like these two can work and they'll probably have, I'm hoping they at least have a better match than they had at WrestleMania, because that was really underwhelming.
And I don't think that they will. I think that this is going to be one of those, especially if this is the main event, this is going to be one of those things that people go like real heavy anti-Reigns afterward.
Oh yeah.
I'm worried about that.
If this is the main event, then you're going to see similar things to the Samoa Joe walkout thing.
Yeah.
For the Reigns Samoa Joe thing, because, and it's not even, it's never Roman's fault to the extent that it should be, in the sense that, like, it's, even though people will look at Reigns and say, oh, he's not the top guy because of this, it's not, this isn't his fault. It's the fault of the fact that you're basically plastering Shane McMahon over everything, to the point where people are now seriously worried that Shane McMahon's about to become the WWE champion.
Mm-hmm.
And that should never be a situation that you need to be thinking about.
Yeah, this isn't McIntyre's fault for not being in the position that he should be in, which he should be like...
He should be fighting for the Universal Championship, either on this show or any other show, really.
Yeah, he really should be. And Reigns should be in a much better position than being like, well, we really like him, and that's it.
Well, yeah, if I had my way, you'd have McIntyre being built up all this month and staying away from... Either a top guy, whether it is Roman or Seth or whatever, just stay away from whoever you're going to have him face at SummerSlam, having beat whoever else he feuds with in the build-up to it, and then he beats Rollins for the Universal title at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And then you have him feud with Braun Strowman after that. It seems pretty straightforward and logical at that point.
And I never would have booked Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania, because then I would have thought, hey, you know what? Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania 36 might be a possibility.
Yeah. It's just because Roman should have fought Elias. If this is what they were going to do with Elias now, Roman should have fought and just squashed Elias in a few minutes on his comeback.
Something like that.
It doesn't necessarily have to be Elias, but he should have had a squash match at WrestleMania.
Now, I think that this is going to be factored in with the Universal Championship match to a certain degree. It's Seth Rollins versus Baron Corbin, because fuck it, why not just do a rematch? That's like, you don't have to do as much work that way. And the special guest referee is completely unknown at the moment. And this is where I think we're getting... I'm going to kind of tie this into a couple different things here. I think we're looking at a scenario where Shane McMahon is going to be the special guest referee. And that this is going to lead to over the course of the next few weeks, Drew McIntyre is going to get positioned to fight Seth Rollins at Extreme Rules. But there's another factor into this that could throw that all for a loop. And this is where I kind of feel like an idiot because I can't quite like guarantee any kind of prediction because it's like, well, there's like a bunch of different ways that they could go and they all seem like they're kind of predictable, yet you can't really predict which one. So then that kind of throws the whole thing for a loop wherein AJ Styles and Baron Corbin are going to pick up their feud at some point. So does AJ Styles help Seth Rollins retain here and offset the special guest referee? That way they could do Baron Corbin versus AJ Styles in some kind of Extreme Rules match at Extreme Rules. Or is WWE really going to just drag this out even more and have Baron Corbin versus Seth Rollins again at Extreme Rules? And that is where AJ Styles comes in. So that way they could do AJ versus Corbin in a regular match, which would suck, at SummerSlam.
Oh, that's a lot of potential scenarios you've thrown out there.
Yeah. It's essentially, do they want to do Corbin Styles at Extreme Rules, or do they want to do Corbin Styles in a normal match at SummerSlam? And if that's the case, then we backtrack and we start booking other people, because if they do Corbin Styles at Extreme Rules, Rollins needs another number one contender. And that's where either Bobby Lashley, Sami Zayn, or Drew McIntyre comes in, or Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins, Shane McMahon.
Well, if I was just throw on my inspector cap and try and suss out who the actual special guest referee, Shane McMahon is definitely a top option. But I think there are many different ways they could go, which would be slightly more interesting. So it means they almost certainly are going to do Shane McMahon, but there are other alternatives. I thought of obviously Brock Lesnar's somebody that you have to at least think could be, if they really wanted to be stupid about it and say, oh yeah, well, this place isn't selling out at all, but we're not going to say that Brock Lesnar's showing up, because why would we do that? So it's very unlikely it's Brock Lesnar because of that, but you never know with them. Paul Heyman's already said that he's not going to do it. There's many people on the episodes of Raw and SmackDown that have said that they're, well, that Seth Rollins has taken out with his steel chair. You could have, I thought it would be quite interesting if you have Charlotte Flair be the special guest referee. Because of the Becky Lynch thing. So you essentially, and also it's the idea of Seth Rollins isn't going to hit Charlotte Flair with a steel chair and take her out.
Yeah, that's true. So that'd be really interesting if they did that. So that's no way it's happening.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I would have thought either Charlotte Flair or, say, Lacey Evans had lost earlier in the night and they want to drag that feud out another month into Extreme Rules, then she's the special guest referee. Just so it's just a case of, like, Rollins knows that he's screwed because he can't do anything. And then you have Becky come out during the main event. Well, if it is the main event, but during this match, and take out the referee until a real referee comes out and Rollins retains that way. Yeah, there are other connotations you can put onto it. But at the end of the day, they think that Shane McMahon's the biggest star in the company right now. So, of course, if he's not on the card already, then they have to find somewhere to put him. So, yeah, I think it's most likely that he's the special guest referee. But in terms of the actual result, it should be Rollins retaining. Because I've now gotten to the point of, I know why I hate Baron Corbin. And it's not even anything to do with Baron Corbin. He's not the most, like, enigmatic superstar of all time, but he's perfectly serviceable in the ring and he's perfectly good on the microphone. It's just that he's there all the time. I don't think there's, I mean, it's a case of, like, everyone's shown almost on every single week, but just with him, he just feels like I've seen more of him in the last year than any other superstar. And that's not, and he doesn't merit that due to, like, his level of ability. Like, he should just be a guy who's turning up every now and again to have a decent mid-card feud with whoever. But beyond that, he's just always in the main event feud.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's not even a case of, like, it's because Baron Corbin is awful, because he's not terrible. It's just that he's way above his station, and he's always been there. But, you know, Rollins will retain. I think that'd be absolutely insane to give Baron Corbin the Universal Championship. And But I have more faith that they would do that over giving Ziggler the championship when we discuss that later. But we'll get to that when we get to it. But yeah, so I think Seth Rollins retains with Shane McMahon as a special guest referee due to somebody's, like, either Reigns's or Miz's interference to counteract the referee. I don't think he'll be Styles. I think they're dropping the Styles thing.
You know what would be a real, like, just groan kind of like, oh my god, you guys aren't even fucking trying type of thing, would be Shane McMahon is the special guest referee. The whole match is basically Seth up against the wall. Roman Reigns comes out and Superman punches Shane McMahon, and a new referee comes in and whatever. They don't factor in the AJ Styles thing at all. They don't factor in McIntyre and all the other people and whatever. And then they spend the next, how many weeks is it until Extreme Rules?
Not long enough.
Like 3 weeks or so, I think. That they just go like, all right, like now it's going to be like Seth has to fight Elias and Reigns has to fight Corbin. And we're just going to pair these two up. And then, hey, at Extreme Rules, we're going to have Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns in a tag team match and like a street fight or whatever against Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre and the Revival and Elias in a handicap match or like, you know, like I could see that being the type of scenario that they go with and just basically make it like a main event of a Monday Night Raw, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, obviously.
There's so many ways that they could make this not interesting. Is, I guess, the best way that I could put it. Like, yeah.
Well, I just don't think they go with the AJ Styles core thing because I think they're turning AJ heel.
Oh, I don't think that's the case.
Well, they seem to be unifying him and the club again.
Yeah, I think that the club's turning babyface.
Well, they already
They got that Tokyo thing.
Oh, yeah, I think that we'd take face to that one because Triple H needs to have the well-known guy is teaming up with to give himself a little bit more credit.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the next episode of Raw, they do something where, like, the Revival pick on them or something, and then that's just what happens. And Styles and Gallows and Anderson end up fighting the Revival and Elias on some episode or, you know, like that kind of thing, like...
I mean, that's definitely an option. I went based along the lines of them, the way they're going together was more along the lines of them saying, oh, we've got to get serious, we've got to get focused again because we're just treading in like circles in the moment. So, and usually the way they would do that is by, that would be the inclination of like, yeah, we're going to take things seriously, so we're going to be heel.
Yeah. Well, they did put them up against the Usos too.
Yeah, and then have them lose in like 2 minutes or whatever. But... I just don't see AJ getting involved in this one. I think if it is going to be the way that it goes, it'll be incredibly predictable, which is just the only people that will potentially be involved are these two, Shane, Drew, Elias, Miz, and Roman Reigns.
It's basically just the set, like, and this is like, oh, well, this prediction's kind of generic. Why aren't you guys trying harder kind of a thing? But it's like, that's the truth of the matter is Seth, Corbin, Shane, Elias, The Revival, Drew McIntyre, Roman Reigns, The Miz, AJ Styles, all these people are all intertwined, and they're the only ones that they seem to be focused on. So, of course, it's going to revolve around them, and it's not going to be some kind of surprise thing where it's like, the special guest referee is fucking superstar Billy Graham. Like, you know, it's not going to happen like that. It's just a matter of, like, which direction are they going to go for Extreme Rules and SummerSlam? And then that's how you factor it in. Because I also think that Brock Lesnar has nothing to do with this. I fully think Brock Lesnar is beating Kofi Kingston.
Not on this show, though.
No, not on the show. Although it is a possibility because it is a steel cage match. But I think it's happening at Extreme Rules. I'm working under the assumption Kofi wrestles some kind of Extreme Rules match. And Brock Lesnar cashes in, and then that way Brock works SummerSlam and beats the crap out of Kofi.
I'm still under the impression that we're getting Kofi against Shane at SummerSlam.
I'm leaning more towards Shane against Rollins.
I think it could be either way. Either way, it's already pretty sad that we both think that he's going to be fighting for a world championship at some point. So.
And I feel like if they just did one of those fan council survey things or something, that they would realize that Shane McMahon as this authority figure type thing. Just a couple months ago, people were very excited to hear that there was no more authority. And Shane is not pulling it off.
No.
But you got to keep doing it because you got to prove yourself right. You
because know? It's the only story we know, and we're going to beat it into the ground until
we've it got worked no with fans Austin. Left.
Yeah.
If it worked with Austin, it could work for the next 40 years. You know, it's so annoying. Yeah, so I guess we might as well talk about it. The steel cage match, Kofi Kingston versus Dolph Ziggler. Actually, before we backtrack that on that one, I think Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins both win.
Oh, yeah, Reigns and Rollins.
Yeah.
But I would say
there's more of a chance McIntyre wins than Baron Corbin.
Yeah, definitely. Just they want to, if they are thinking about pushing McIntyre immediately into the title picture, it makes sense for him to win, but they don't necessarily have to do that just to give him the title shot anyway. So
I'm crossing my fingers that their game plan, which is not the best game plan in the world, but I'm really just hoping we don't get AJ versus Corbin in a regular match at SummerSlam. We get Styles interferes here. He costs Corbin the match. We get Corbin versus Styles in a street fight or something at Extreme Rules. Shane McMahon doesn't get the match at SummerSlam. He gets the match at Extreme Rules. And McIntyre is the one facing Rollins at SummerSlam. That's the way I want things to go down. But I don't have a whole lot of faith in that.
No.
But the Kofi Kingston-Dolph Ziggler steel cage match is something that I think is going to be one of the better matches of the night. And one of the easier ones to predict, because I can't imagine that Dolph Ziggler wins that championship.
No. I think it was just the way that I heard described Dolph Ziggler. It's just a case of he's the replacement of the replacement for the WWE Championship match, because Kevin Owens was a replacement for Daniel Bryan when Daniel Bryan was injured for a little while, and then Dolph Ziggler was a replacement for Kevin Owens when Kevin Owens didn't go to Saudi Arabia. So Dolph Ziggler is basically just the third understudy.
Yeah.
To the actual WWE Championship contender for this night. And I mean, the match will be good because these two have good matches, even though I wasn't particularly enamored with their match at Super Showdown. But then again, why would they work hard on Super Showdown? You don't really need to in that regard. The steel cage has lost all luster to me.
Yeah.
We've seen it too much. We saw it like a couple
of pay-per-views.
Yeah, Money in the Bank, yeah. So they seem to be going to that well quite often, and also the actual stipulation itself is dead anyway, because it's the idea of, you can't get involved after you had Xavier Woods interfering in our match last time. No one can get involved now. I've got you all to myself. First of all, that should really be the babyface saying that rather than the heel.
Yeah.
That's just like completely backwards way of booking it. But then you also know that someone's going to get involved in it anyway, because that's how steel cage matches in WWE and practically everywhere else at this point work. But I will commend I'll give WWE its bumps where it needs it, but I also commend them for how they've booked Kofi Kingston. He's an absolutely incredible champion and a great role model, and just everything they've done to present him as a legitimate WWE champion has absolutely worked for me.
This could have very easily gone down the Rey Mysterio route where it's like, well, he won the title, now we can have everybody beat him.
Yeah. It's just because I don't see this as a WWE champion. While I don't necessarily see Kingston winning the title ever again, I don't see him being relegated to the mid-card. Like, just being like, okay, so you had your run, now you're just straight back to the mid-card eventually. I think it's just a case of, I think now you've had this run, you've had this successful run, you can put him in WWE Championship matches in future and like have him push towards the main event and be a strong Intercontinental Champion or United States Champion down the road and all that other side of things. But you always know that Kingston could win the title again. That's all character. Like, I'm trying to think of someone who's comparable. Kurt Angle never really, he held the titles quite a few times, but it's like, he was always, like, he won them in very, like, short periods. And then he would just be in the top main event scene, but you knew at any point Kurt Angle could be the WWE champion.
And kind of like Big Show before his career dwindled.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a guy who's always in the perennial thing of like, oh, he could just feud with whoever for the time being, but then when we need to push him back to the title picture, we can do that at any point in time.
Yeah.
I think Kingston is, if he hasn't reached that level yet, he's very close to. And this win over Ziggler, which is, I'm almost certain will happen, will be just another notch in his belt.
But yeah, I think that this is going to be one of those matches that we look back on and we go, this is really like, this was one of the better matches of the night. I'm really curious though, why they decided to go with the steel cage thing, because it's like, they just did it at Money in the Bank and they usually have that as one of their go-to things for Extreme Rules. And if they do that again at Extreme Rules, it's going to be like, God damn, you guys just cannot think of anything, can you?
Well, that's just the way they did it for the, with the Xavier Woods interference. They had to go with some sort of reason for it. So if that's the way they wanted to hit it, then a steel cage is it's the thing. The steel cage is a logical response to what happened, but it doesn't make sense in regards to the fact that they just had a steel cage match happen before.
It kind of makes you go, well, they probably shouldn't have had Stomping Grounds.
Because
It's like, think about it. If this would have been the card slightly manipulated for Extreme Rules and we had a couple more weeks to build some things up, I think that would work better, because you do the Stomping Grounds, the Super Showdown thing, and then Ziggler says, well, I don't want the interference, I want a steel cage match. Okay, well, there's your Extreme Rules match for that. Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans have their match at Money in the Bank, and then they're like, you know what, we're just going to continue that feud because fuck it, we can't think of anything else. But how do we make it a little bit better? I don't know. We do like a last woman standing match. Okay, then you got your Extreme Rules thing for that. Seth Rollins and Baron Corbin. What do we do with that? We got a special guest referee. Well, that's not really Extreme Rules, but at least it's some kind of stipulation behind it. Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns. What do we do with that? How about that's a street fight? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that seems to be the triple threat match for the Cruiserweight Championship. That's already no DQ. Like, that seems to me like they added an extra pay-per-view where they didn't need it.
Yeah. But, I mean, to be fair, the pay-per-view they added was the Saudi Arabia one.
Yeah.
And they definitely don't need that. Well, they need the money, I guess.
Even that, though, I'll justify that more, not in the sense of, like, doing the Saudi Arabia thing, but, like, I'll justify that card more than this one.
Oh, yeah. It's sad that that's a better card than this one.
It's really just... let's see. United States Championship is on the line. Samoa Joe against Ricochet. This one's actually one of the more interesting ones. It's like, wow, that's a feud I haven't seen repeatedly. And there's two talented people, and they can put on a great match. So, yay.
Yeah. I try not to get overexcited, because I think the combined time of Samoa Joe's last two pay-per-view matches is about is about 3 minutes.
Yeah, it hasn't been much.
Because of the other, either first the other guy getting injured, Rey Mysterio getting injured, and then Samoa Joe getting injured in a match. It's like, he's not having the best of luck in his reign as United States champion. But this is an opportunity for him to have an extended match with a guy who is absolutely awesome, and Samoa Joe is completely awesome as well. And it's something that we just haven't seen yet. This is a match we haven't seen in WWE. So you have to look forward to it.
This one is the other match that I'm looking forward to the most. It's the Kingston Ziggler one in this one. And I hope that they're given quite a bit of time, and I hope that they can just go out there and have no, like, stupid booking scenarios, because I feel like that's going to dwindle so many other matches that are on this card. And this one's just going to be like, well, we focused on the Reigns and McIntyre stuff. We focused on the Corbin and Rollins, the Ziggler and Kingston, the Lynch and Evans. We got all these things going on that we're, you know, stuck on. Joe and Ricochet, you just go out there and just wrestle.
And that'll be enough.
That'll be, like, the best thing of the night.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If these two are just allowed to just go out and do what they do, then I'd be surprised if any match can touch those two.
Yeah. And I'm saying Samoa Joe retains, because the story is Rey Mysterio's comeback.
Yeah, you have to think that Rey Mysterio and Dominik's storyline with Samoa Joe will continue at some point. I wouldn't be against Ricochet holding the title. You may think that it's like a bit soon, but it's the United States title. It's supposed to elevate people anyway. And he's had a few decent wins on Raw over Cesaro. So it's not like he's would be unworthy at this point in time. But I'd like to see Samoa Joe get a bit more of an extended run with the belt.
Yeah, it's kind of a win-win. If Joe retains, I like Joe. If Ricochet wins, yeah, it's cool. I like Ricochet. So it's like two thumbs up on this one.
Yeah, definitely.
Two thumbs down on Becky Lynch versus Lacey Evans for the Raw Women's Championship match, though, because that is something that I did not feel like we needed to see again. And I like both of them, but I have been really just tanking when it comes to Lacey Evans' promos.
I see Lacey Evans' promos are the best thing about her character. It's the matches which I struggle with.
Oh, I'm not saying the matches are good either, but the promos, I think, are really dreadful.
I think they fit. I think she has a lot of charisma, which makes it work. In the sense that I think she has this natural swagger to her, in the same way that Becky Lynch does. Because sometimes Becky Lynch's actual verbiage isn't that good, but she has the cocksure attitude that really carries it through. Whereas Lacey has the very prim and proper "I'm so much better than you" attitude that it works as a heel. But her actual matches are leaving me very cold. The fact that she is athletic and she can have decent matches, but like that match that she had with Charlotte Flair a couple of weeks ago is among the worst I've seen this year. In regards of, you shouldn't put two people in a match and try and make them do a shoot fight when neither of them are trained fighters. just completely illogical. But in terms of the actual feud, this is completely illogical in the regards to the fact that Evans has already lost clean to Becky Lynch.
Yeah. There's no reason for them to still be fighting.
Yeah, the only reason why you can do it is the sense of, like, Lacey Evans cost Becky Lynch the SmackDown Women's Championship. And then it would be a case of Becky Lynch demanding that she gets a title shot, that she faces Lacey Evans again so she can beat her into the mat and just be done with her once and for all. And yet it's been a case of, like, oh, Lacey Evans has just been awarded this title match again.
I love that this is in the era where they had said no automatic rematches, and then it's like, okay, well, that at least makes more sense than somebody losing their title shot and getting an automatic rematch.
But you didn't see the fine print, Tony. It's only the champions that don't get automatic rematches.
Yeah.
It's the challengers really get every challenge they want until they actually win it.
Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want to say the Lynch thing is like completely lost sting, but it's definitely not as big as it was going into WrestleMania. But then again, that's always the case with these things, because let's face it, it's not necessarily always down to WWE's booking. It's also due to the fact that fans are just very, very fickle, as Daniel Bryan
said. And they get burned out too.
Get burned out, yeah. Especially with the wildcard thing, Lynch has been on multiple shows multiple times. She was champion of both shows for a while as well, so. But just a case of, it's hard to carry on the momentum because the story's in her winning the title, and then after that point, it's just a really like extended epilogue.
Yeah.
And they could have definitely done a better job of it. It would definitely have a lot more steam to it if she'd had different challengers up to this point. Whereas her only challengers have been Charlotte Flair, who she's always fighting, and Lacey Evans. If even on an episode of Raw, she'd had a match against Naomi or Dana Brooke for the title, at least it's different.
Yeah, she could have been like, you know, now I'm a champion. I want to be a fighting champion. I'm going to fight everybody. Let's have a match against Naomi. Let's have a match against Natalya. Let's have a match against, Tamina, like just
Sarah Logan, all that other stuff.
Yeah, Sarah Logan. Maybe that's when Sarah Logan debuts the Viking gimmick of hers. And then it's like, ooh, we got like the, you know, this new Viking thing against Becky Lynch. Who's going to win? Like, you know, like maybe just kind of do something other than starting every single episode of Monday Night Raw with the script that says, got to do a Lacey Evans and Becky Lynch thing tonight. And then you start SmackDown, you got to do a Lacey Evans, Becky Lynch thing tonight. Then for, you know, twice a week for 7 weeks, like what the hell, you know?
Yeah. I'm not happy that this feud is continuing, and I hope it at least finishes on this show.
And I don't think it will. I am actually even thinking that maybe Lacey Evans wins the title.
I think that's a very real possibility, and that's, again, another sad thing, state of thinking about things. Because I think it's just a case of recently they seem to be giving a lot of babyfaces wins, and it's almost like they're building up to a night where basically heels win every single match.
Yeah.
Just to really stick the boots into. I feel sorry for everyone that's had has actually bought a ticket to go to the show. Not in a sense of like they'll probably have a good time, because as much as you can shit on WWE, going to a live show is usually a fun experience. But it's just a case of just being in here, and then if they decide to unleash the "oh, heel's going to win everything" stuff, then
I think that the heel's win everything is going to be SummerSlam.
That could potentially be.
I think that's their like reset point, kind of, where they're going to go, okay, well, we do that, and then we're going to have a whole bunch of heel champions, and then that way we know that we've got like baby faces that we can try to build up during that whole October switch.
But I will stick with Becky Lynch for this one. I think, especially with the way that she won the championship, and it feels too soon to take the titles off, the title off her. It would still be weird if like she still had both titles. I was hoping she still had both of them up until this point as well, but the fact that she only has one of them, I don't think you can afford to have her lose it just yet.
I'm worried that Evans wins the title here, so that way they can have another match at Extreme Rules, and then Becky wins the title back. Or that's where Charlotte comes in, and then they have a triple threat at SummerSlam.
Very real possibilities. But I'll still stick with Becky for this one.
I'll very, very slightly lean more towards Becky, but it would not shock me in the slightest bit if Lacey Evans won that title. Shock me if Alexa Bliss won. That's the last match for us to talk about here, is the SmackDown Women's Championship match. Bayley is defending against Alexa Bliss because, essentially, why not? And this is factoring in Nikki Cross a little bit, so there is always a possibility that Nikki Cross helps Alexa win the title, but I am kind of future booking, and I'm thinking Alexa versus Bayley in an Extreme Rules match doesn't seem like it's a really good idea. They could very easily just not have that have any kind of stipulation, because Extreme Rules used to be that every match on the card had a gimmick, and then eventually they went, no, how about we just have like one match, and it's like a kendo stick match or something fucking stupid like that. But I'm thinking more along the lines of Alexa loses here because of something that she can twist as Bayley cheating. Like, maybe Bayley kind of like grabs the tights a little bit, or, you know, something along those lines. Alexa gets pinned, but her foot's on the rope and the referee doesn't see it. Something along those lines. And then Nikki Cross gets a championship match for some kind of gimmick purpose against Bayley, and that way they can kind of keep Alexa out of the harm for that. And then over the next month or so, they build to the whole, like, Nikki realizing that Alexa's just using her, and then triple threat at SummerSlam. Bayley versus Alexa versus Nikki.
Oh, I don't see Alexa being in the SmackDown title picture for that long, because I think she'll eventually transition onto the Raw side, because Charlotte has to fight for the title at SummerSlam.
I think she's fighting for the Raw one. I think they just completely have given up on this wild card thing being like separate champions. I think that they're just like, hey, Charlotte, you can just do whatever, and this person could just do whatever.
Considering how terrible their previous feud was, like a couple of years ago, I think this is the best booked feud going into this show.
Yeah. I'm actually more interested in this than I am in a lot of the other ones.
Because everything makes sense. Just a case of, along the lines of, I mean, the thing that doesn't make sense is why is Nikki crazy in the ring and not crazy outside of it? But if you take that and like compartmentalize it, just a case of Alexa Bliss is manipulating someone again, totally within her character. It might be a bit of a trope now, but at least it's consistent. So she's manipulating another person to do her bidding, essentially. She's trying to twist the narrative that Bayley is a bad person, when actually Bayley is obviously one of the most beloved people on the roster and very kind-hearted, but Alexa is managing to get in Nikki's head to say that it isn't. Bayley's accusing her of just being exactly what she is, which is just a manipulator and a terrible human being and someone who just wants to get ahead at every opportunity. And yeah, it's very realistic why these two don't like each other. And I appreciate that side of things. I personally think that like Sasha Banks is coming back, I think. And it makes the most sense in the world to have Sasha go after Bayley for the Women's Championship at SummerSlam if they decide to go in that direction. Regardless of how they probably feel about Sasha Banks after everything that's happened and how a lot of people feel about Sasha Banks, if you turn Sasha Banks just like as a very petty, like vindictive heel, you play off the fact that she is petulant and she whines about all this stuff and says that she was just, the reason why she was off TV is because she was upset that she'd lost the championships. She thought Bayley had cost the tag titles, and now she's won the SmackDown Women's Championship and she hasn't even given any consideration to her at all. That could be a really good feud. And so I'm kind of hoping that that happens. And if that doesn't happen, then I think it's going to be Bayley against Charlotte at SummerSlam and Alexa will find her way into the Raw Championship match instead. But just because, who gives a fuck, really? But I think this is going to be a situation where I'm hoping the match is not as bad as any of their previous matches.
That Kendo Stick match was real bad.
Yeah, that is one of the worst matches of the last, like, 3 or 4 years. It's, yeah, it's just, that's why I don't really want it to go to Extreme Rules. It very well could go to Extreme Rules, because at this point in time, like, even though there's so many talented women on the SmackDown side of things, but they're all involved in something else, but also not involved in something else. In that, yeah, they're in feuds, but they're not actually doing anything.
Yeah, like Ember Moon's got her thing where we know at some point Ember Moon and Carmella are going to team up against Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville.
Yeah, and outside of that, Carmella's dealing with R-Truth most of the time, and Kabuki Warriors are waiting for their tag team title opportunity, and Peyton Royce and Billy Kay are just doing the tag team title stuff at the moment. There's not really anyone, like, on this, Mickey James is injured, Liv Morgan's not doing anything, and you're not exactly going to put Liv Morgan in a feud with Bayley for the title. Well, not, I mean, you could, you threw Lacey Evans in there completely, like, fresh, so you might as well throw Liv Morgan in there as well, at least she's been on the main roster for a while. But, yeah, I think Nikki is going to cross Alexa the match here, and Alexa's going to manipulate in a way to a sense of, like, now Nikki Cross is kind of owes her for life, almost.
I could see that.
So Alexa Bliss forgives her to show her kind nature side, but deep down she's not just plotting about how Nikki is going to, like, how she's going to plot Nikki's downfall, more a case of, like, how she's going to utilize that a lot more to her advantage, because Nikki will now feel indebted to Alexa a lot more because of the mistakes that she made. And then maybe that can lead to either Extreme Rules having a match with Bayley, or potentially transitioning Bliss into the Raw Championship picture as well, with Nikki by her side, until you eventually get the blow off between Nikki and Alexa Bliss, when Nikki finally realizes that Alexa has been treating her terribly this entire time in the same way. And that storyline works. And even though it would be almost exactly the same as the Nia Jax storyline, that Nia Jax storyline worked really well.
Yeah.
And so I don't have a problem with doing it, because that is Alexa Bliss's character. That's Alexa Bliss to a T. So, and yeah, it's kind of happy that this is the final we went on, because even though I can't say I'm super excited about the match, because based on previous experience, I don't know how well it's going to go, at least this thing has felt like it's been booked properly and it's worthy of a pay-per-view platform to present it on.
Yeah, this one has a lot more positive energy to it than the other matches, because Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre on paper, that's better. But everything surrounding that has just been garbage. Whereas that one promo that Alexa had where she was saying, like, everybody made her feel worthless in NXT except for Charlotte, and even Bayley was supposed to be the nice one and whatever. I was like, that was better than anything that has revolved around 5 other different feuds combined.
Yeah, and Bayley's comeback was just as strong as well. It makes her look like she's now not the weak like baby face where she was just all about the hugs and doubting herself and riding Sasha's coattails or anything like that. She stands on her own 2 feet as champion, and it's a more powerful baby face, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
So, but I think it would be silly to have Bliss win the title now. Not saying that's completely out of the question. It definitely isn't, but I think Bayley will retain here.
Yeah, I'm going the same. Bayley retains. Either Nikki ends up inadvertently costing Alexa, or Alexa comes up short because of something that she can twist as being like, well, Bayley cheated, or Bayley just straight up wins. But I just can't imagine that Alexa's winning that title right now.
No.
But that's the card. So Stomping Grounds It is what it is, and we'll see how that all plays out. It could end up being a major surprise of something that's great, or it could be just as blah as it seems like it is. But, yeah, we'll be breaking that down post-show-wise after the card is done on Sunday night. Once the show is over, the post-show will recap everything, review everything, and then we'll kind of start carrying on into Extreme Rules and stuff. And as far as carrying on, the things that are coming up next on the next week of all the Smack Talk stuff that we have, we got the hot tags, we've got the round two of the Sexiest WWE Superstars Tournament, so go ahead and vote on round one if you haven't done that already. There is going to be the Fyter Fest predictions, eventually the Fyter Fest post-show, and I had said before that the mailbag is going to be next week, and there's still a possibility that that is going to be next week, but that is a lot of stuff for us to do. And I'm trying to kind of figure out how we can balance everything out. So there is a possibility that I might bump the mailbag to like Sunday or something, because the Fyter Fest thing is on Saturday. So maybe we do that on Sunday. Then maybe I bump the hot tags off a little bit, or, you know, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do that. So whether it happens over like Thursday or Sunday or Monday or, you know, whatever, it might even be like July 2nd or something that we do the mailbag for June. Case being, if you got a question, send it in as soon as you can, because that way it'll be a lot easier to kind of figure out how many things we have. So no waiting until Tuesday night after SmackDown to send them in and stuff like that. Send them in as soon as you can, and we'll get around to them when we can. We got Fight for the Fallen coming up right after that. We got Extreme Rules. So there's so many things that are happening, and we're going to try to figure out just how to squeeze that all in, including the other things that are happening that are going to be taking place that are like the 2001 and the G1 climax and stuff. Callum will tell you about that a little bit in a moment. But all that stuff that is happening is all going to be found on YouTube. So if you are not subscribed to the YouTube channel, do that already and ring that little bell, because that notification thing will alarm you of when... Oh, alert you, not alarm you. It's not going to be like, warning, warning. It'll tell you when we have those videos up. And if you are following on the audio-only types of things, like the platforms for Google Play and Spotify and Stitcher and iTunes and Anchor and whatnot, then by all means, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SmarkOutMoment. Check out SmarkOutMoment.com. That way you'll be aware of when these videos and stuff come up. There's also other things happening on SmarkOutMoment.com. Just go to the website, check out all that stuff that is going on a daily or weekly basis. We've got FanboysAnonymous.com for movie reviews and geek culture topics and everything. So if you are interested in my ideas of X-Men who should not be mutants, or recently wrote up something about my ideas of what the Falcon and Winter Soldier TV show should be about. Movie review for Toy Story 4 coming up soon. That's all going to be on FanboysAnonymous.com, so check that out. Go to the YouTube channel, subscribe, do all that kind of stuff, Facebook, Twitter, blah, 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 blah. There's a Patreon for both Fanboys Anonymous and SmarkOut Moment. If you've got the spare change and you want to help us grow and you want to promote some ideas for us to do in the future, that's the best way to get that going. There is also TeePublic and Redbubble for merchandise shop kind of material for Fanboys and for SmarkOut Moment and A-Mango Tees. And I got e-wrestling news, I got Bleacher Report, I got way too many things, I'm spinning way too many plates, and I'm not even a chef. But Callum, you got some other things to fill us in on.
Yeah, that's really quite a lot, but I'm going to add on top of it. Well, first of all, if you're so inclined, you can follow me on Twitter at Wigmeister14. And then after doing that, you can check out some of the, like Tony said, some of the articles on smartcatmoment.com, which I'll be contributing to, which would be... Power Rankings in particular, so that's the one that I'm responsible for, so check those out around about Thursday or Friday. Again, adding to the butt ton of content for next week will be 2001 A Wrestling Odyssey. Me and Rob will again hop back into a DeLorean and travel back to 2001 to review King of the Ring and fill you in of all the things that are happening with WWE, and is WCW going to become a real thing again? Or is there, what's happening in, I don't know, Vince McMahon's mind? Just dive into that again. But it'll be like just an interesting trip back in time, as it always is. And if you want to, if you haven't caught up already, you can check out all the other episodes we've done. from January all the way through to May, including a special on WrestleMania 17. So check all those ones out. And then the G1 Climax starts very soon. Kicks off on July 6th. Prior to that, myself, Rob, and hopefully Tony as well, just to add a little bit of an outsider's perspective, we'll do a little preview of the G1 Climax. It won't be anything super in-depth. It will just be a bit of an explanation as to what the G1 is for like people that might not be as familiar but really want to get into it, because it's a really stacked card this year, as Tony alluded to in the hot tags. And then we'll just give our predictions about who we think is going to win, who's going to get the most points, what's going to be like a big shocks or anything, what matches we're most looking forward to. And yeah, we'll be all ready for their kickoff in the USA very soon. And then we'll also do a review of like it when the finals happen in like towards the end of July. So yeah, just more and more stuff to talk about.
And I'm a 12-year-old kid right now, because when you were saying that the G1 Climax is like heading our way and stuff, the only thing that came to my mind was, you heard that, folks, the climax is coming.
The climax is coming soon. Wait for it.
The G1 spot is totally coming.
Oh yeah.
So lots of things coming your way, everybody. Thank you for all your support. And hopefully you'll enjoy not only this podcast, well, you've already enjoyed it at this point, we're at the end of it, but hopefully you will enjoy all the other things that we got coming your way, and you know, join the ride with us. So thank you again for listening. Thank you for dropping your comments below, obviously, and telling us what you think about this. And we will see you next time. This has been another Smart Cat Moment. We're being counted out.